The Index Astartes, a history of the Space Marine Legions and subsequent chapters, where appropriate, up to the 13th Black Crusade.
The Death Guard. The Death Guard Legion, consisting of the dread Plague Marines of Nurgle, have become a relentless and terrifying scourge upon the Imperium of Man. But it was not always so. The Death Guard was one of the original 20 Space Marine Legions, united in the defense of mankind under the command of the Emperor and their fearsome Primarch, Mortarion. When the Emperor's 20 nascent Primarchs were scattered across the galaxy, the Stygian scrolls tell of one who came to rest on a bleak moor, strewn with dead and scattered with the carnage of battle for leagues in every direction. The planet was barbarous, perpetually shrouded in poisonous fog, whose mountainous crags were ruled by warlords with fantastic powers and horrific appetites, and whose human settlers, stranded there millennia before, were crowded into the lowest valleys beneath the choking mists. They lived lives of unrelenting terror, eking out a peasant's existence by day beneath a dim sun which never burned completely through the fog, and cowering by firelight after dark from the terrible beings which moved unseen above. The greatest of these warlords stood in triumph on the battlefield, reveling in his massacre, until the silence was shattered by a child's cry. Legend tells that the warlord walked the sea of corpses for a day and a night, in his creaking battle armor, drawn by the wail of the infant. For an instant, he considered ending its young life, but no mere human ought to be able to breathe the poisonous miasma of the heights of Barbarus, much less cry out as this child did. For long moments, he contemplated the thing which appeared human, but was clearly more. Then he gathered up the infant and carried it from the carnage. For all his dark power, until that moment, he had not had what this child now promised, a son and heir. Born of death, upon a field of death, the warlord christened the infant Mortarion, child of death. His master tested the infant's limits, when he had determined precisely how high into the toxic clouds of Barbarus's peaks the child could survive, he erected a stony keep and fenced it behind black iron. Then he moved his own manse beyond to the highest crag, where the atmosphere was deadly even to the nascent Primarch. Mortarion grew to adolescence in such a world of citadels of weeping grey stone and iron fences, where the very air was death, and the sun never more than a distant smudge. It was a world of constant war, against opposing lords who came with golem armies of stitched-together dead one day, then tormented shapeshifters, more monsters than men the next. To survive, Mortarion learned at the foot of his overmaster, and learned ferociously everything his master could teach him. Mortarion devoured it all, from battle doctrine to arcane secrets, from artifice to stratagem. He learned and he grew, a child of the Emperor for all that, superhumanly resilient to the poisonous air around him, and superhumanly strong, even in the absence of sufficient sunlight or nourishment. Mortarion possessed an intellect which was highly keen, and which asked questions his lord was not wont to answer. Increasingly, the questions centered around the fragile things in the valleys below, which the warlords preyed upon for their corpses to reanimate, or victims to a curse. His master kept Mortarion as distant from the human settlements as he could, but his very act of denial fed the maturing Primarch's obsession. The day finally came when Mortarion could be denied no longer. Mortarion slipped through the dungeons from his keep. The last thing he heard was the voice of the Overlord, the only father he had known, roaring in the miasmic darkness from the high battlements as Mortarion descended from the mountain, renouncing the Primarch for his betrayal, warning Mortarion that a return would mean death. Descending beneath the mists was a revelation to Mortarion. His lungs were filled with air free of poisons for the first time. He smelled aromas of food being prepared, of crops freshly harvested, heard voices unmuffled by fog, and for the first time, heard laughter. The young Primarch realized that he was among his own kind, that the fragile prey of the warlords were his own people. And with the realization came rage.
He determined to bring them justice denied them by the dark powers which moved above. Mortarion's acceptance among the human settlers of Barbarus was no simple thing. However like them he felt himself to be, to them he was little different from the monsters above, towering over even the tallest of them, gaunt and pallid, with hollow, haunted eyes, which betrayed the horrors he had seen. Mortarion terrified most of the settlers. They looked upon him with suspicion and fear. It stung the young Primarch, but he bided his time, using his great strength to work the fields for their meagre harvest, knowing that his opportunity to prove himself would come. When it did, in the twilight hours, he was ready. From the darkness came shambling dark things. A lesser lord led his corpse-like thralls into the settlement, taking with silent, remorseless strength those they could carry off to their master's dark purpose. The peasants fought back as best they could, with torches and farmer's tools, rendered into makeshift weapons. It was all they could do not to run, much less offer a meaningful fight. They had played out the futility of this scene their whole lives, and they knew how it would end. Until, that is, Mortarion strode into their midst, towering over them with an enormous two-handed harvesting scythe. He charged into the ranks of the enemy with all his rage-born might and drove them from the village. Their dark lord smiled at him as he neared and withdrew into the poisonous heights where this rebellious human could never reach him. He was still wearing his contemptuous smile when Mortarion caught up with him on the mountainside and exacted his vengeance for the fragile prey below. After that night, Mortarion's place among the settlers was never in doubt. As he matured, Mortarion taught the settlers of Barbarus what he knew of warfare. Word of his exploits spread, and many others made the perilous journey to learn. Slowly, villages became strong points, and the villagers more effective defenders. Eventually, Mortarion went amongst the people, travelling from settlement to settlement, teaching, building, and, when occasion demanded, defending them. Always, however, his ultimate justice was denied. The dark powers could always retreat into the impregnable bulwark of their poisonous mists. His people could only fight in defense. That had to change. Mortarion recruited the toughest, most resilient of Barbarus's population, forming them into small units which he drilled himself, teaching them not only defense but also attack. He turned blacksmiths from tool-working to weapon-making when time allowed, and crafters to the shaping of armor. And with the best artificers he could find, he bent his formidable intellect to the problem of the poisonous air. Inquisitor Menkoff's monograph, Cataphract of Death, relates the now infamous result. When next a warlord descended from above, the villagers mounted a defense, successful enough to drive his unholy army back. Mortarion and his retinue of warriors, masked with crude filtering hoses and breathing gear, advanced into the fog after them. For the first time in living memory, the prey brought death into the realm of death, killing the warlord and massacring his army. Mortarion continued to improve his warrior's breathing apparatus, and he and his Death Guard, as his retinue came to be known, campaigned ever higher into the Dark Power's domain, encountering ever more virulent pestilence. The constant exposure to ever higher doses of toxins toughened the Death Guard, traits which proved transferable to each new iteration of the Death Guard, growing tougher, as though emulating their champion himself. Only the most toxic peaks were denied Mortarion and the Death Guard, and they warred for months across the poisonous spine of Barbarus until only one grim man stood against them, one which Mortarion knew well. The concentration of death about it overcame his force, threatening even Mortarion himself, and so he withdrew. Upon his return, however, his world was destined to once again spin out of his control. Mortarion and his brethren arrived to find the village alive, unlike he had ever known it, when everyone's lips was word of the arrival of a stranger, a great benefactor, who brought promise of salvation. The Primarch's mood darkened. This day of deliverance was one he had worked for his whole life, and he found himself altogether unhappy to see it co-opted by the arrival of some newcomer of uncertain agenda. Tale-tellers say Mortarion flattened the massive wooden door of the hall upon his entrance. Seated at banquet, he found the elders and a stranger, who was their opposite in every imaginable way. Where they were gaunt and pale, he
He was robust, his flesh bronzed, his physique utterly perfect. The people greeted Mortarion's arrival expectantly. Despite the effect wrought upon him by Barbarus's poisons, the connection between the new benefactor and their defender was nevertheless plain to all of them. As plain as father and son. However, Mortarion was oblivious to any connection. He greeted the stranger with barely masked hostility, which quickly turned to outright anger at the stranger's utter unflappability. The elders spoke of the new arrival's promise to unite the people of Barbarus within a great expanding brotherhood of humanity, which could help them be rid of their persecution from above. Mortarion felt his moment of triumph slipping from him, twisting the haft of his ever-present scythe until his knuckles whitened. He declared that he and his Death Guard needed no help to finish their quest for justice. It is said that the benefactor quietly challenged the stormy young Primarch's assertion, pointing out the Death Guard's failure to reach the last High Citadel, and then threw down a gauntlet. If Mortarion could defeat the High Overlord alone, he would withdraw and leave Barbarus to its own means. But if he failed, they would join his Imperium of Man, and Mortarion would swear total fealty and allegiance to him. Over the protests of his Death Guard, he spun on his heel and struck out alone for the last man standing against him. The Keep of the Overlord he had called father. If some part of him knew that even he could not survive the highest reaches of Barbarus, he did not acknowledge it. Mortarion climbed ever higher, driven by the inevitability of the imminent conflict with his once master, driven by his desire to bring final justice for the people of his world. However, he was mostly motivated by a compulsion to prove himself to the stranger below. The confrontation, when it finally came, was mercilessly brief. Mortarion choking in air so toxic that the hoses of his protective breathing gear began to rot away, struggled to the very gates of the Overlord's Citadel, calling out his defiance. The last thing he saw as he fell to his knees, the world turning grey as he was overcome, was the Overlord of Barbarus coming for him, to fulfil the promise he had made generations before. Then, the mighty stranger stepped between them, defying the death fog, and felling the Overlord with a single blow of his gleaming sword. Mortarion was true to his oath. When he recovered, he bent his knee to the stranger and swore himself and the Death Guard to his service. Only then did the Emperor of Man reveal himself as the young Primarch's true father and the destiny such service would bring, command of the 14th Legion of the Adeptus Astartes, the Space Marines. The Librum Primaris, or the Book of Primarchs, tells how Mortarion brought the relentlessness, remorselessness, and resilience of his personal Death Guard to the Legion built of his own genetic material, and how in turn they adopted his retinue's title as their own. The resulting prowess of the Death Guard was recognized from the moment Mortarion took command, but the young Primarch never settled in Imperial society outside of battle. Mortarion was a grim, driven Primarch, fixated on reckoning with the oppressors of the galaxy. The easy camaraderie of the other Primarchs was alien to him. The Shadow Journal of Bellerophon, the Dark Angel's librarian, confides that, of them all, he found kindred spirits in only two. Night Haunter, the Dreadmaster of the Night Lords, and Horus, Warmaster of the Imperium, the right hand of the Emperor. Horus, above all others, recognized the value of the Death Guard. He would often place Mortarion and his legion in the center of his battle line, counting on the enemy's inability to oust them so that he could either lever his advance from the rock of Mortarion's immovable position or use it as the anvil upon which the Imperial Hammer, in the form of the Lunar Wolves or the Night Haunters' Night Lords, would break the foe. It was a mercilessly effective combination. In the charismatic Warmaster, Mortarion found a mentor who seemed to understand his goals and appreciate his methods. So close did Mortarion appear to be to Horus, in fact, it is believed that at least two of the other Primarchs, Ribute Gilliman of the Ultramarines and the ever-watchful, ever-taciturn Korax of the Raven Guard, approached the Emperor with concerns about where the Master of the Death Guard's loyalties lay. The story of his allegiance to the Emperor, won through his own failure, was by then well known, and anyone with even a passing familiarity with Mortarion knew that the pallid Primarch chafed at it. The Emperor is said to have dismissed their concerns with a wave. Loyalty to Horus was de facto loyalty to the Emperor. On that matter, the Emperor could not have been more wrong. The Betrayal. On the feral planet of Davin, the War Master and his legion, now named the Sons of Horus in his honour, had fallen to chaos. Before they would leave, Horus would be utterly possessed, forswearing allegiance to the Emperor for the cause of chaos and his own advancement, and would draw the Primarchs and Battle Brothers of half the Imperium's legions to his cause. Transcripts of the Council of Kheron, convened after the heresy, ascribed responsibility, suggesting that, unlike some of the other Primarchs, Horus did not need to resort to ritual possession to win the Death Guard to his side. Horus promised that, under his rule, the old order would fall and a new age would dawn. A just age, with right ensured by the mighty. Mortarion turned on the Imperium, as he had turned on the overlords of Barbaros, and joined the rebellion which would forever sunder the Imperium. The Horus Heresy. What he did not know, then, was the price he would be called upon to pay. Horus was a brilliant strategist. He knew that the heart of the Imperium was Terror, and from the very moment of his rebellion, Terror was his objective. In short order, he had gathered sufficient strength to shatter the defences of the Imperium and lay siege to the Imperial Palace itself. Mortarion was determined that the Death Guard would be there with him. With his entire fleet, he crossed into the warp and straight into Nightmare. The Death Guard fleet was becalmed by an impenetrable warp storm, its navigators neither able to guide them through it nor find safe passage into real space. The fleet was reduced to drifting through the Immaterium, and while they were still, the Destroyer came. For Mortarion and the Space Marines of the Death Guard, there was nothing so terrifying as the Plague, which made their legendary resilience meaningless. These were the warriors who the Imperium had sent to conquer worlds no other man could set foot upon, much less fight and win. Pestilence, contagion, toxin and pollution. There was no environment so hostile, which Mortarion and the Death Guard could not overcome. Until the Plague which raced through their fleet. It roiled in their guts, bloating and distending their once superhuman bodies, transforming them into horrible, pustulant grotesques. They were made corrupt within, and sickening to behold without, and they grew sicker and sicker, yet could not die, their own constitution becoming their worst enemy. What they endured was unimaginable, yet none suffered more than Mortarion. For the Primarch, it was as though he were back upon the mountaintop of Barbaros once more, surrendering to the poison, without the mercy of unconsciousness to claim him or the Emperor to come to his salvation. Whether he perceived, in those terrible hours, the loss of what he had once stood for, and the damnation he had wrought upon himself and his legion, only Mortarion will ever know. Unable to endure the suffering any longer, Mortarion offered into the Immaterium himself, his legion, and his very soul in exchange for deliverance. A presence in the Immaterium answered, as though it had been waiting all along. In the depths of the warp, the great god Nurgle, lord of decay and father of disease, called that debt and accepted Mortarion and the Death Guard legion as his own. What emerged from the warp when the Death Guard fleet broke out bore little resemblance to what had entered. The gleaming white and grey armour of Imperial champions was no more, burst and shattered from the horrific bloating of infected bodies, scabbed with boils, protrusences and the filth of corruption. Their weapons and machinery of war were now powered by the sickly sorcery of chaos, glowing with lambent green luminescence and oozing gangrenous pus. The name Death Guard itself would pass into secondary use, as the walking, pestilent carriers became a terrifying sight across the Imperium. To their victims, to their erstwhile allies, even to themselves, they had become the Plague Marines. Horus was eventually defeated by the Emperor, and chaos was driven back across space, finding refuge in the Weeping Sore known as the Eye of Terror. Mortarion and his Death Guard retreated there as well, but not in disarray, as many of the other legions did. Even in damnation, the resilience of the Death Guard remained, and under the direction of their master, they withdrew into the Eye intact.
Loyalist Space Marines and Imperial Guard regiments breaking upon them time and again. Within, Mortarion claimed the world, which would become known as the Plague Planet, as his own. Its location, near the fabric of reality, was ideal for launching new strikes into the Imperium and across the galaxy. He shaped it so satisfactorily and defended it with his Plague Marines so well that his patron, Nurgle the Unclean, elevated the Primarch to demonhood and gave Mortarion what the Emperor had denied him, and what Horus had not been able to provide. A world of his own. Mortarion became the overlord of a world of poison, horror, and misery. He had come home. Homeworld. Barbarus was a feral world which orbited near its dim yellow sun, creating a thick, miasmic atmosphere of toxic chemicals. The most virulent gases rose through Barbarus's perpetual cloud towards the heat of its star, making the world beneath it a dismal place of night, unbroken by starlight and with short, shadowy days. An atmosphere breathable by humans existed only in the lowest elevations, on flat moors and in the valley basins of the jagged, stony mountains which spined the world. Beings, immune to the toxic soup of the planet's higher atmosphere, once existed on Barbarus, building great grey keeps in the mountain fastnesses. When humans came to Barbarus, the horrific conditions from which they had to eke out survival quickly reduced them to a pre-feudal state. The higher beings' incomprehensible powers, their ability to survive where men could not, and above all their hunger to prey upon them, experiment with, and accursed humankind, caused the settlers to ascribe to those beings a medieval supernaturalism. What manner of creatures these dark overlords were will never be known. Since his elevation to demonhood, Mortarion has, consciously or not, remade the Plague Planet very much in Barbarus's image. Its citizens cower in festering villages on the planet's surface, serving their supreme masters, Mortarion's champions and other demonic chosen of Nurgle, who reside in mighty fortress citadels high above them. Diseased things, which should be dead, yet are not, roam the landscape, and skeletal Mortarion rules over all, enthroned upon the highest peak of the world. Combat doctrine. Mortarion was well-educated, if narrowly. Matters of culture, history, philosophy were often alien to him, but on the subjects of dealing death, he was a prodigy. Mortarion believed that victory came through sheer relentlessness and communicated that ethic throughout the Death Guard. Their weapons and armour were rarely the most expertly artificed, certainly not the most beautifully ornamented, but functioned without flaw. The Death Guard did not manoeuvre fancifully or confound their opponents. They picked the best ground upon which to fight, then smashed their foes after they had broken themselves against the Death Guard line. There was no environment which Mortarion and the Death Guard feared. What Mortarion and his adepts could not devise means to compensate for, the Death Guard overcame through sheer resilience. Mortarion learned battle in a theatre of rocky mountain terrain without the benefit of machinery. Though his considerable intellect allowed him to grasp the value of such support, when his elevation to Primarch of a Space Marine Legion made such things as tanks and transports available, the primacy of the foot soldier remained ever the trademark of the Death Guard. Mortarion preferred to utilize huge waves of infantry, well-equipped and highly trained on an individual level. He demanded that they be able to function and fight in almost any kind of atmosphere, and gave little emphasis on specialized units using jump packs or bikes. In fact, the Death Guard did not have dedicated assault and tactical squads as such. All his Space Marines were expected by Mortarion to be equally adept with bolter, pistol, and close combat weapon, to fight with whatever weapon circumstances dictated. Such doctrine lent itself well to the use of tactical dreadnought armour, and the Death Guard regularly used Terminators before the Heresy. The Death Guard were particularly renowned for their success at such high-risk missions as Space Hulk clearances, and the Plague Marines continued that success, using Hulks to spread disease, infection, and the cult of Nurgle throughout the body of the Imperium. The combat doctrine, which served the Death Guard so well in life, now suits the damned character of the Plague Marines to perfection. Organization. Mortarion was an infantryman and the Death Guard were organized around the principle of equipping the individual Space Marine as well as possible. Obedience was extended through every rank. Sergeants were extensions of their captains, who were extensions of Mortarion himself. If there were any of the original legions that could be said to be of one body, it was the Death Guard. As a consequence, the Death Guard were organized into fewer companies than any of the other first founding legions. There were never more than 7 companies at any time in its history, but each was of considerably greater size, and heavy with Space Marine infantry, including Terminator squads. With Mortarion elevated to demonhood, his hand upon the Legion became more remote, and the Death Guard became broken up through space and time into smaller units. Warriors of the Death Guard are most often seen afoot, or at best accompanied by mad, plague-infested dreadnoughts. Few of the tanks and transports of the Legion still function, their upkeep and maintenance being no priority to Space Marines, dedicated to the incarnation of rot and decay. Some such constructs do soldier on, possessed by minor demonic entities or infested and animated by nurgling hordes, the swarming worker drones of the Lord of the Unclean. These forces are often found organized in squads of 7, banded together into cohorts of 7 squads, an echo of their Legion's organization model at its height. 7 is also the sacred number of the Death Guard's patron power, and they believe that by forming themselves in multiples of that number, they carry the favour of the Demon Lord Nurgle and create a cabalistic strength. Whether their rule of 7 draws the attention and sorcerous blessings of the Death Guard's deity or not, the manner in which the Plague Marines carry themselves to war still reflects the hand of the Primarch, which forged them, shaped them, then led them to their damnation. The Demon Prince Mortarion remains master of the Death Guard even after their fall, orchestrating their movements unseen from his bubonic throne. Captain Garrow, hero of the Death Guard. When Horus's rebellion was finally understood, 70 Space Marines, alone of 5 legions, remained steadfast in their loyalty to the Emperor. These men seized the Imperial cruiser Eisenstein and broke the traitor's blockade of the Isvan system to carry word of the treachery to Terra. Their warning may have saved the Imperium. Commanding the Death Guard contingent was a great battle captain, Garrow. There are conflicting testimonies regarding the fate of Captain Garrow and his men. There are those who say that in the turmoil accompanying Horus's assault on the Imperial Palace, no one knew what to do with the handful of loyal Space Marines whose entire legions had turned traitor. The captain, indeed, all of the Eisenstein 70 who survived the gauntlet to reach Terra, were placed in custody, pending deposition by the Emperor himself. A deposition which, after his fall and enshrinement in the Golden Throne, never came. Garrow and the other heroes of the Imperium never saw the light of day and died prisoners. Others maintain that Garrow himself fought in the palace defence, and when he saw what his brother legionaries had become, he renounced arms and served devoutly as the Master Apothecariat, where Space Marine apothecaries received their training, futilely seeking a cure for the plague which had taken his entire legion of brothers until his own death. More fanciful tale-tellers link Garrow and his band to secret societies, moving behind the public face of the Imperium, and claim that Garrow and his original Space Marines still live, an elite force committed to thwarting the aims of Nurgle, Mortarion and the Death Guard, who appear in battle clad in the colours and flying the banners of the pre-heresy Death Guard, then vanish like grey ghosts from the warp. Still others report that Garrow was unable to resist the same lure to damnation which claimed his Primarch. In the aftermath of the heresy, Garrow turned to Nurgle and became a champion of the Death Guard. As the Lord of Flies, he still leads plague fleets from the Eye, clad in black, iridescent armour and a power claw like a skeletal hand, accompanied by the maddening buzz of insectoid wings. Beliefs. The beliefs of the Death Guard echoed those of Mortarion, beginning as one and ending as the corrupt opposite. A resolute determination that individuals should be free of oppression and terror became a conviction that individuals were not suited to decide what was just for them. A faith in inner strength, iron will, and unshakable resolution in the face of hardship led to pride, arrogance, and an utter contempt for those they deemed inferior. When Nurgle's rot came to the stranded Death Guard, their pride and arrogance was revealed, and their contempt for weakness turned upon themselves. Their surrender to Nurgle left them with only one seething, burning outlet, stoked white-hot by the depths of their self-loathing, to infect the strong, slay the weak, and rot the foundations of everything in their path until it collapsed. Their debasement would no longer seem shameful if the pestilence of their unclean lord eventually brought everything to ruin. Gene Seed. The Space Marines of the Death Guard always reflected the gaunt, shadow-eyed quality of their Primarch. That gave the lie to the hardiness with which they were made. The contagion which led to their damnation corrupted them physically as well. As Plague Marines, the once gaunt Death Guard are now bloated and seeping like an infected abscess, covered in boiled sores and weeping wounds, crusted with the brown and green filth of the unclean. Nurgle does not accompany this repulsive aspect with gifts of mutation as freely as other powers. Such capricious change is the province of his antithesis, Zench, but on occasion will alter the countenance of a Death Guard aspirant with a tentacle, facet-eyed head of an insect or some other hideously repulsive form. Battle cry. The Death Guard have no rallying cry as such. As Plague Marines, they are the incarnation of silent death, the virulent epidemic, the wasting disease and the remorselessness of decay. They are a pestilence and pox, famine and blight, contagion and cancer. And like all of these things, are most terrifying when they come without word or warning. Well, there we go. Papa Nurgle's favourite there. Hope you enjoyed that. A little background there on Mortarion and the Death Guard. There'll be another one coming up soon. I'm doing them in order, so I believe the next one is the Thousand Sons. I'm pretty sure. I'll have to double check. If you've never read The Lords of Silence, I do highly recommend it. It's one of the best 40k books out there, novels, and really goes into depth of why someone would willingly worship Nurgle. And it kind of makes sense. Embrace entropy, you know? Just embrace it. Just live it. I'll recommend that book, seriously. If you've not read it, definitely get it. The Lords of Silence by Chris Wright. It's a corker. It's a corker. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the channel. You can see your names going by here as I speak. And if anyone would like to also support the channel, you can use the links below or become a YouTube channel member. If you don't want to do that, which I do fully understand, please do give the video a like. I'd really appreciate that. Make sure you're subscribed so you get updates when I do new stuff. And hit the little bell thing. But let me know in the comments what you think. We'll be going through all these indexes as I go along. I've also found a couple of other ones for the sort of non-founding Legion sort of chapters. A couple of them. And maybe some other bits and bobs. And then we'll move on to some other stuff. You know, I like to change things up and do different things as we go along. But yeah, I'm going to go now. Bye-bye. Have a good time. And like I say, just embrace entropy and love the little lords and Vorks is best. Bye-bye.